Welcome to The Pebble in Your Shoe, the podcast where we spotlight ordinary people living remarkable lives while debunking myths about aging, gender, and societal norms. I am your host, Alona Juanis, and together with our guests, we redefine what it means to live creatively on our own terms. Whether you're ready to retire, making a U-turn in your career, or just want to carve out a life of meaning, intention, and purpose, listen to these stories of people who are not merely living, but transforming and thriving. We all have feelings of unease, vulnerability, and fear. Let's not let them stop us from making the next part of our lives better than before. Be inspired and motivated by the stories presented here on the Pebble in Your Shoe podcast. Here we go. Mike Morin is 63 years old and is the owner and CEO of The Rational Boomer. He's been a DJ, a traffic reporter, a production director, and has done almost any radio job imaginable. In retirement, Mike transitioned into talking about politics on TikTok, where he currently has 308,000 followers, plus 294,000 on YouTube, and another 10,000 on Facebook. His message resonates so much that he also records a daily one-hour podcast, where he expounds about national politics and the news of the day. He has an open-door policy where he welcomes other rational boomers to come on as guests. He's got a wife who keeps him in line, a couple of sons, and a granddaughter whom he adores. He's from Minnesota, but spends his downtime in his favorite state of Georgia. Come along to listen to Mike's third chapter story. Hello, podcast enthusiasts. Welcome back to the Pebble in Your Shoe podcast. Today's episode is a special slash unusual treat because I have broken my pattern of interviewing only women. Personally, I think we hear enough from male voices in our society and culture, so that's why I focus on women. But today I decided it's time to let some masculine energy in. And so the one and only Mike from the Rational Boomer podcast is joining us. He's cool, calm, collected, fearless, smart, and most importantly, rational. In this crazy world, I always feel better after listening to him. So, Mike, thank you for coming on my show today.
No problem. You almost got me going there, though. You said, I think we've heard enough about from male people, and I'm going, she's already starting shit. I'm kidding. I know what you mean. I hear enough of male voices too. I'm happy to see that you have a podcast, and it sounds like a very interesting podcast. And I'm honored that you were breaking the policy just for me to be on the show. And I'll try to connect with my feminine side as much as I can.
No, we want, but don't count on you. Just the way you are, Mike. Don't change. Don't go changing. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So Mike, I won't.
Tell us, so you have a podcast and
I do.
Well, first of all, you're retired. You had a career in radio and then you moved into podcasts / TikTok. So tell us a little bit about how that all happened.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I worked in radio for most of my life. And when I retired from radio, I worked in some other kind of business situation. And then when I left that, I decided to do the podcast, but I knew before I started a podcast, I needed to kind of build an audience of sorts. So I did the unthinkable and the thing that everybody thought was crazy. And I started doing TikToks. And then I decided on top of that, not only am I going to do TikToks, I'm not going to try to do anything fancy or production. I'm just going to be an old white guy sitting in his living room talking shit about politics. So that's what I did. And my intention was to get an audience in TikTok and try to transfer them over to the podcast so I could start with some kind of base, at least initially. But I will tell you this, Alona, I actually did podcasts 15, 17 years ago when they first came out, I was a traffic reporter and no creative outlet at all. I had to pay the bills. I had to feed my kids. And the whole concept of podcasting came out, and I said, that's the future, because people are tired of listening to all the commercials and all the BS and all the radio stuff. I know I was, even though I worked in it. So I created a bunch of podcasts, didn't really know what I was doing, and nobody really listened to them much. I had some listeners. So I'd done podcasting a long time ago, and I thought, I definitely want to do this again, but I have to set it up right. I don't want to just be sitting here talking to myself. And fortunately, it kind of worked out as I planned.
Okay, so you started this when you quit your job, right? You retired, and then, or was there an overlap?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe a little bit of an overlap, not much. The thing is when I finally retired from the last thing, I had some good fortune and made a decent amount of money. I have a pension. My wife has a pension, Social Security, all that stuff. So we were in a comfortable spot with money. I didn't have to go get a job. And I told my wife, I said, this is the dream of most people, to be able to sit and do what you want to do without any concern of keeping the lights on or paying the mortgage. We've got all that covered. Now I'm just going to do what I want. And of course, when I started, people thought, that's crazy. That's not going to work. But I kind of willed it to happen. In my mind, I knew it was possible, and it was an opportunity to try to prove my point.
So you started with TikTok, and when did that mm-hmm. start to like you have thousands of followers. So when did that really start to gel and become something?
It's really, well, to be perfectly honest with you, in my mind, I thought, if I can get 10,000 people following me, that's a good start. I mean, that'd be impressive for an old white guy who doesn't really offer anything but a attitude and a foul mouth. But so I started it, and it started to grow pretty quickly. I mean, not crazy. A lot of people go on TikTok and they get 1 million followers in 4 days. I've got 306,000 followers, and it's been pretty steady, about 100,000 a year. So when I got into 6 months and I'm at about 50,000, I'm going, shit, I'm doing something. I'm already way ahead of what I thought I would ever accomplish. So I just kept going. And then over time, I kind of figured out how it all works and what people liked and why they liked it. And I just kept doing the same thing. And I think a lot of people who get a lot of followers decide, well, I got a lot of followers. I must be pretty important, so I can do anything I want. And I know better than that from my years in radio. And I decided I'm just going to keep doing what I do. And I just kind of grind it out every day. I get a lot of followers. I get a lot of views, but it's pretty steady. And, every day I get up, I say, I got to do about 4 or 5 TikToks minimum just to keep up the pace. At one point it was to get followers, but the other point now is I got people who kind of count on me to be there for whatever stories out there. So I feel an obligation, and I appreciate that obligation, because I'm doing what I did in radio. When I was a traffic reporter, people counted on me to be there, and they tuned in every day. And I've been fortunate to be able to be put in that same situation with Rational Boomer, which is amazing to me. I'm as surprised as anybody that as many people follow as do.
Well, I think one of the reasons you have so much, so many TikTok videos is because there's so much news. It's just nonstop.
Yeah, well,
you have plenty to talk about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And ironically, I think whatever success I might have on TikTok or even in the podcast, surprisingly, I can attribute to Donald Trump. If there wasn't so many problems and issues in the world, and I saw a lot of people really scared, and I got this weird mind. Every time I see a problem, I kind of analyze it down and I figure out what the real problem is. I need to do that for my own sanity. And then it just translated into the TikToks, and then people would watch it, and you'd hear MSNBC tell you the world's going to end, and then I tell you, yeah, not really. There's this and this and that. And then people took to it. So you know, I'm kind of calming my mind and at the same time calming other people's minds. And I think that's what people kind of connected to. Also, the thing that they connected to is the one thing I hear a lot is you're saying exactly what I want to say. So there's a lot of people of a like mind that want to say this that either don't have the platform or the position. They've got some restrictions like jobs or family that, and they got me who'll say anything to anybody about anything at any time. So it's easy to get on board with somebody who's saying what you want to say without any restrictions.
So the rational boomer, how did you come up with that name?
Yeah, that was, it was no big deal, really. I had to come up with some kind of name, and I played with an idea of doing something before about being a boomer, because that's what I am. And it was kind of a, everybody said you need a niche, you know, and I never knew, understood that I could have a niche. I am a boomer. And then I'm trying to think, what do I call it? Normal boomer? Not crazy boomer? And then I just came up with the word rational, and I said, screw it, I'll just go with that for now, and if I need to change it, I'll change it. And I just did it. So there was no great epiphany for that name. It just happened.
Well, I think the journey that you describe is sort of how I found out about you. Just was on TikTok, and I guess the algorithm realizes my political beliefs, and you know, they call it like this side of TikTok, that side of TikTok, and I landed on your side of TikTok, and then I'm like, oh
thank God.
Thank God. So I'm like, oh, he has a podcast, maybe I should listen to it. So then I was walking the dog every day, and I'd be like, oh, let's listen to what does Mike have to say. And honestly, I don't watch any news on TV. I get a lot of my news from TikTok. I get my news from Substack, Robert Reich, Heather Cox Richardson, like people that I think are trustworthy of saying what's interpreting right. What's happening. And so I do get a lot of my information from you, Mike, because I feel like you really do a good job of finding out what is the truth, what is really happening, and how do you go, I mean, I have a lot of faith in you, Mike, so how do you go about finding out the truth?
And I don't know if people have so much faith in me if they know how lazy I was, because, you know, to be, I think the thing that I bring to the table is that I have a natural curiosity, and I want to know about something when I see it. Other people are busy, or they might be too lazy to do it. They hear what they hear and they go, oh my God, the world's going to end. And I get a sense about things, and I know the way things are going, and I say, okay, it's going to be this way. People say, no way. They choose to take the negative side. And I just get a sense about it. But honestly, the only thing I do when I started, I'd watch MSNBC, CBS, NBC. I watch all of them, not so much to get the story, but to get the headline. And then once I got the headline, then I looked into the sources I trust, AP or NPR or BBC or whatever like that. So I get the tip from the media, and then I dig out the story and try to get all the facts I could, try to corroborate facts so that I knew they were truly facts. And then at that point, the whole process is really simple. If I have a story and I know the facts, I sit in front of the mic and I kind of formulate the whole report in my head. I don't write anything down. And I do it probably four or five times because I'm kind of structuring it and setting it up in my head. So it's all very simple. And I think it has a lot to do with my training in radio. I was a traffic reporter watching cameras all over the system. And I was a play-by-play announcer. And when you do those sorts of things, I got to be able to see something and boil it down and describe it to people to understand right away. So I kind of developed that aptitude. I can see the story, find information about the story, and then wrap it up in some kind of report. And that's what I try to do. Most people will sit and, you know, they'll just talk. I try to structure mine as a report. I try to make it as quick as I can. I try to get to the point as quick as I can. I cannot stand TikToks that take me through 2 minutes before they get to their point. Get to the fucking point. Mm-hmm. So it's the whole process. People will say to me, how do you spend all day doing TikToks and podcasts? I don't. If I need to do three or four podcasts, I can sit down for about an hour, or three or four TikToks. I can do that in about an hour. Podcast, it's an hour podcast typically. And when it's all said and done, it took me an hour and a half to do, hour and 40 minutes, you know, just compile stories that I've already talked about a bunch and just kind of keep an outline and do it. The whole process is pretty simple. And I think it lends itself more to the fact that I'm really curious about it and I want to know the story, and that I have this aptitude where I can explain it to other people, as my family will tell you, and they're tired of.
So have you always been interested in politics, or were you like me? Like in 2016, I became interested in politics. After that election, I'm like, what just happened? And then I'm interested. Yeah.
You know, I will say I've always had an opinion about politics. Have I been interested to this level? No. But the trigger for me was when Donald Trump got elected. I even predicted he would get elected when this was all happening, and people were surprised that he would get elected. I wasn't the way everything was going. But the thing that triggered me about Donald Trump and that got me focused on politics and really me trying to inform other people about how bad this is because Donald Trump is very similar to who my father was. My father, you know, he wasn't wealthy in terms of a billionaire, but he did very well when he was young. He was a narcissistic. He was abusive to his wife. He wasn't the greatest father to any of us. And so I knew the story. I knew who I was looking at. I knew the story and how it would play out. And I also know how it ends because I've seen it all. And so that really kind of pushed me to start talking about it, because I think somebody needed to speak out against this guy. The media was basically playing into everything he did. They didn't care about the country. They only cared about ratings, and he was a shit show. So they just encouraged it. They never held him accountable. They never pressed him. You know, if I would have had the chance to talk to Donald Trump, and any media would take that same tack and press them, he would have never been president. That's why I hold the media largely responsible for Trump being president. Mm-hmm. So I was triggered by Trump because I knew what was coming. Yeah. I really didn't know that it would be this bad, but I knew it wouldn't be good.
So now I just want to get a mental timeline. So 2016, and then how many years until the TikToks started coming and you were inspired to talk about it?
I believe it was 2020, maybe. Okay.
Was it the COVID?
Around the time of COVID?
Yeah.
Well, it probably had to be around the time of COVID, because after I gotten out of radio sometime back, you know, that was almost 8 years ago. And then I got into some other business. And with the onset of COVID, I happened to luck into a situation. I was basically, people with truckloads of products would call me, and then I'd find buyers for them, a partner and I. We did a lot of that. Well, when COVID hit, I got very fortunate because there was a shortage of masks, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. And it was tough getting masks in this country, and everybody was trying to sell them out of China directly, and nobody wanted to send money to China and hoped against hope that they would get the mask. It turned out I had a customer or a source in California that I sold a lot of other stuff for them. And they had a family that manufactured masks in China. They were a Chinese company here. And they were sending this guy 5-6 million masks a week. So I was one of the few guys that could actually sell these masks. They were in the country. People could pull up and put them on their truck and not have to be worried about whether they're going to get ripped off or not. So that worked out pretty well. That went for a short time. And when that ended, after doing pretty well in that time, I go, how can I go back to selling These ridiculously low price things. I've made enough money. I'm fine. And that's about the point in 2020 or so that I started doing the TikToks.
Okay, so I think I've been with you since the beginning then, because I've been listening to you for a while. So this is called the pebble in your shoe, and I want to know, what kinds of obstacles did you face when you were doing TikToks? Maybe it's the people who were heckling you on TikToks, or just like, what are the things that sort of disturb you, disrupted you?
Well, the first thing that was the hardest, I mean, up until the time you get any kind of notice, the whole thing is getting people around you on board. I mean, if I was sitting in my living room and I said, "Oh, honey, I'm going to do a couple TikToks," it would be kind of like, "Christ, really? Why are you doing that? You know, that's not going anywhere." And I knew it could. So at first, you know, when I'm doing TikToks, I got to kind of do it when I'm alone, because I'm worried a little bit about the ridicule of the people who just weren't buying into it or believe that it could be good. Now, with 300,000 followers, everybody goes, I say, "I got to do a TikTok." "Oh yeah, go ahead, do that." Now I have credibility because I actually have people listening. But that was one of the first stumbling blocks. I felt limited as to when and where I could do this. So I had to get it in when I could get it in. I mean, I could have done it without doing that, but I just didn't want to bug other people with it. You know, I knew they weren't on board, and justifiably so. And I didn't want to listen to it. And I didn't want to put them in an uncomfortable position. So that was the first tough part. The Trumplafucks, as I call them, they started showing up ultimately. And I did what every creator does. I try to argue with them. Well, I quickly found out that that's no good. They don't have the capacity to learn or comprehend or retain any kind of information. And it just got to be pointless after a while. Then I saw some bigger creators starting to get banned and videos taken down. And I said, you know, I can't teach these people anything. The platform to me is more important than the engagement with the Trumplafucks. So at that point, I started blocking every Trump supporter that ever came on my page. Literally, I would go through every
comment.
And if anybody looked like a Trump pumper, I would block them immediately. And my premise was, they can't take me down if they can't see me. And, you know, 3.5, 4 years later, that's proven to be true, because I don't get many videos taken down, if ever. I've learned some ways to avoid it, because TikTok will take you down for stupid reasons too. But I still do it to this day. I go through my comments and I will block any Trump guy, because I don't want to risk the platform because of some idiot.
Geez, you got a lot of comments, don't you? That must take you a while.
Well, yeah, I got to be honest. I don't get to go through all of them anymore. But, you know, I think once you've established a certain amount of credibility with TikTok, they give you a little leeway, you know. I mean, because there are people who say, how do you say these things on TikTok and not get taken down? Because I don't usually hold back. And I'm not sure why. I think there is a little bit of, you know, they kind of give you a little space if you've done it for so long. And I'm not really calling individuals out. Usually, if I'm talking about what a Trump fan has said to me, I don't always put up their comments, because I don't want to expose them or embarrass them directly. I'll just take the question and I'll answer it. So I'm cautious about it, you know, about, I know even with me, there's a line that I won't go to. And that comes from my time in radio. I know there are limits and ways to say things and ways not to say things. So I don't. So I think I fall right about the line, and for whatever reason, I'm getting away with it up to this point.
So are you keeping a list of all the times that you've been right? Because you said that Trump was going to be elected.
Oh, I'm always right.
Where's the wife? Where's the wife? We got to get her on here.
No, she's gone, thankfully. But I'm always wrong here.
Yes, you're wrong here. But you are right a fair amount, or most. I haven't noticed that you've been wrong about, like, the things that you predict with the budget and just certain things. You're like, don't worry, it's not going to happen, and you explain why. And I feel like you've been right most of the time. Like, do you also? And I don't want you to get a big head about this, but do you feel like you're using logic and, you know, and your insight? And I mean, you've been right about a number of things. Unfortunately, you were right about Trump, but.
Well, you know, I tend to be right a lot about stuff. I have been wrong about things. And I think the important thing is, if I'm wrong, I just come out and, you know, I know they're creators because they've told me they do this. They'll make some claim and then they'll be wrong and they'll just be quiet about it because they tell me people will just forget about it. I don't want people to forget about it if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I want to understand why I'm wrong, because I use logic and facts, and it should turn out the way it does because of that logic and facts. And if it didn't, I have no problem owning up to being wrong at all. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, that's one of the things that people make the mistake of when they're in the media or on TikTok or something. Actually, people make this mistake about everything in life. It's all about ego. I can't be wrong. And I can be wrong, and I will be wrong, and I will admit I'm wrong. And you know what? People don't hate you if you admit you're wrong. But in terms of being right, it's not hard to be right. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a psychic. If you look at the facts. I'll give you an example. Everybody says, well, Donald Trump might win the presidency. Okay, let's look at that logically. Donald Trump lost by 7 million votes and a bunch of electoral votes in 2020, right? I always ask people, so tell me, what has he done since 2020 to make up those 7 million votes and make up more to win in 2024? What has he done? Anything he's done has cost him votes and support. So logic would tell you he has no chance. He would be the best one Biden should run against. And I agree with that. I just don't think he physically and mentally can make it with the stress and strain that he's under right now as a 78-year-old, not very healthy guy. So I don't think he'll be the nominee, but so I'm couching it here. I don't think he'll be the nominee, but if he is, it's cool because we'll kick his ass. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of couching it there. But yeah, I don't care if I'm wrong, especially if I'm wrong about things that look bad. But I don't typically look at bad things. I get the sense right now, it's always been this way in my life. You know how when you're going along and you go, oh, it's just bad and it's nothing but bad news. I can't see anything positive. But with the way we are right now, with all the things happening, I feel like this country is kind of on a trend and the momentum is going to the other side, to the left side now. Mm-hmm. And nothing can go right for Donald Trump and everything is going right for us. And I don't see that stopping and going the opposite direction. It never does that. Mm-hmm. So I feel confident about how everything's going to go, even if there's delays in court cases. Don't fucking worry about it. It's going to be fine.
And I really appreciate your optimism all the time. And that's part of the reason that I do tune in, because I do get overwhelmed with the news. And I never watch Fox News, although the other day I was in a pizza place and it was on. And I'm like, looking at the news and I'm like, well, no wonder these people believe this is how things are, because what they report is like blatantly untrue. And we're dealing like with two different sets of facts, right? But anyway, so what I like about it is that you're so optimistic and calm. And I think that all your viewers will agree that is one reason to tune in, because you're, I mean, do you ever like lose it and go crazy? You seem always like,
no. You know what, when I was young, I've learned something about your mind. You when I was young, I was like any other young man. Something gets mad, you get mad, and you lose your shit, and you say and do things you don't mean. And when I was young and, you know, starting out married and maybe having a family and stuff, I was probably younger than that, though. But I realized that by losing my shit like that, everything worked out worse because I made it worse because of the way I was behaving. And even at that young age, I said, okay, that doesn't work. So let's see if I can do something different. And I rationalized out that somebody once told me, he goes, everything you are right now is what you learned along the way. So if what you learned along the way is how you are now, theoretically, you can teach yourself a different way. So at that point, I decided, okay, you know what? I'm not going to get excited. I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to scream and yell. I'm going to force myself to just be calm. And when I did that, everything worked out much better. So I continued to force myself until my mind learned that that's the way you act. And so I don't, you know, especially with the news and type stuff, the biggest problem people have when they watch the news is they let their emotions get caught up. And the thing about it is, what people don't understand, a lot of people don't understand, people around me, is emotions aren't meant to control you. You're supposed to control the emotions. And if you can control the emotions, you can get a lot of shit done. And so when it comes to the news or anything else going on, I take all emotion out of it. I mean, I know people see me talk fast or say some shit like I'm mad, and people say, "Ah, you better watch your blood pressure." You don't understand. It's for effect and to accentuate what I'm saying. It's not that I'm agonizing about this all day. I don't even think about it until I have to do it. So it's about emotions and it's about controlling them. And I don't get freaked out. I'm pretty easygoing all the time. Like I said, you know, you wanted to see what I am, and what you see on TikTok and the podcast is pretty much who I am, for the better or worse.
That's so nice, because, you know, so many people are always like putting on masks and you don't know where you stand with them. But I think with you, you're definitely, you know, very truthful.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about.
Yeah, that's not always.
What now?
Not everybody likes somebody who's straight. Not everybody likes somebody who's straightforward and bold. That bothers them. They'd rather play the game of. But I tell people what I think, and I learned one thing: being notoriously a smartass, you can say virtually anything to anybody, and they just think you're joking if it's too outlandish. Like I can call out a friend and go, "You're an asshole," and they go, "Oh, Mike, you're so funny." No, I really think you're an asshole, and at least I got that off my chest.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, so you do bring, you bring one friend on your podcast, which is Ed, who's always nice to listen to him. And also lately you've had Old Soul on, which I really like. It's definitely the softer side of Mike when she's on. What value do you think bringing guests on bring to the program and bring to the listeners?
Well, it was about logistics, and it was about being lazy. I thought, you know, if I was going to do the podcast, I would have preferred to have a partner do it, because I do better playing off other people. It makes the show so much easier to do if I've got a guest. But when you get a partner on a podcast, it's really problematic, because they've got to be available when you are, and then you have to negotiate what the show's going to be or what it's not going to be. And, you know, I've done enough shows with people in radio. There's some egos that get involved. And as much as it may seem like it's not the case, I try to take my ego out of this, because that's never good. But I wanted to have guests, and I thought, you know, Ed's an easy one because I work with him so many years. We're of like mind, and I know it would sound good with him. With the others, I said, you know, hey, let's do this differently. I got people sending me letters saying, hey, you want to help me sell my book? No, I don't want to fucking sell your book. That's not what we're doing here. Especially when it has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I said, well, let's just have the listeners come on. And nobody thought anybody would do it. And I wasn't sure, but I threw it out there. And then I did it. And some people came to me and said, God, I didn't think that would work, but that's genius that you brought a listener in as a guest. And I go, that's nothing new. When I was in my early 20s and I was producing radio shows in Minneapolis, I was producing call-in talk shows. So this is little more than a call-in talk show. Instead of multiple callers, I have one. And it's very simple. And Old Souls, yeah, it's definitely a softer side. I mean, it's hard to do a show with the kind of temperament I have when you're partnering up with an angel. You gotta pull it back a little bit. She's amazing find because she's not on any social media. She just watches a lot of videos on YouTube and she happened upon mine. She's never even seen me on TikTok. And she asked a question, a very compelling question. I said, you should come on the show. And she was reticent about it at first, but then she finally came on and, you know, we had a good rapport and I feel comfortable with her. She feels comfortable with me. And a lot of times when she's on the show, I think to myself, you should just shut up because she's way smarter than you.
She's really smart. She has wisdom is what I think is so compelling about her.
And she's 20 years younger than both of us. Mm-hmm. And when she said her name's Old Soul, I go, yeah, and what's your real name? She goes, no, that's what people call me. Literally, her whole family calls her Old or Old Soul. I said, okay. So that's what we call her. And it's because apparently her family saw this wisdom and this calm. And she's had if you listen to the show, she's had a horrific life. She's gone through some shit. So to be calm
for that episode,
and
okay.
Collected. Well, it was, you know, she was married. She was like 15 or 16. She got pregnant. The guy was abusive and stalked her. And she went through a lot of stuff to get out of it. And she finally did. Her daughter's 24 now. And she sounds just as smart as Old Soul. She went through a lot. And it's pretty amazing that she's come out the way she has with all that she's gone through. So not only is she smart and has wisdom, she's got experience too. She comes from a place that she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, and compassion too. She's taking people into her home. And well, you know what? People can listen to you and find out more about Old Soul. But I want to ask you next, and this is when I really, I'm like thinking, why is Mike doing this? Is when you bring on Trump supporters, because the conversations, they go like this. Like you, they say this, yeah. And then you say this, but then they say this, and then you say this, and they're just, they're not conversations, and they're not enjoyable, Mike.
No. Well, I will tell you this, as of the show that I have on today, I've done 956 podcasts, which is crazy. Nobody does it every day, but I just do it. But of those 956, of those 956 podcasts, I've only had 3 Trumplafucks on.
Okay.
They just stand out. And the question is, why do I do it? Because I get tired of them. And I just feel a need to try to kick their ass. I need to put them in their place or at least illustrate what I think the media should have done in the first place with Donald and all the others. Had you done that and put them in their place, they wouldn't have gotten as far as they do. I mean, I guess it's a little cathartic for me. Every time I do that, I feel dirty and I hated that I did it. I don't think it was a good show. And people always tell me, oh, don't do that again. I couldn't listen to it. And I go, I get that. But the ironic thing is, if you look at the stats on my podcast, some of the highest listened to or watched shows are the ones with Trumpify. So everybody's going, oh, don't do that. I hate that. But they all tune in.
Interesting. I mean, the last guy, I forget his name, but he was sort of like, you could tell he was a nice guy. And, you know, I feel like you really kind of felt bad for him.
I did because, you know, I realized what he was doing. I don't even know how much of a Trump humper he was. He was going on TikTok and his only goal was to get TikTok famous and have followers. And he felt like doing what he was doing was the way to do it. He may really believe what he was saying, but he wasn't very well versed in what he was talking about. He didn't know what he was talking about. And honestly, when I get in those situations, people say, oh, I wonder how it's going to go. And I always say, I'm going to kick their ass because they're stupid, because they are stupid. And after going around with him a little bit, I almost felt like I was kicking a puppy, and I wasn't very proud of myself for doing it.
Right. And see, I think that you paint them with a wide brush if you say they're stupid, because I know a lot of Trump supporters and they're not dumb. In fact, they're really wealthy, and I think that they're smart, and there's a reason that they voted for Trump. And when I think about the Koch brothers and all these like billionaires who are funding these grassroots efforts for these, I don't know what to call them, but poorer people. And, you know, they're sort of like molding how they want things to go. And I consider them victims in a way, right? Because they don't even know better. Like, they don't know.
Right. Well, you know, you're right. There are plenty of supporters that aren't dumb. However, I can equivocally say that Donald Trump is a dumb human being. I mean, just everything he does is just stupid. It's ignorant. He's inarticulate. He doesn't think about what he's doing. He implicates himself every day. So the way I, like when I was talking to this guy that you're talking about, he may or may not be dumb, but he supports somebody who is dumb.
Okay.
Which is troubling. And I said to him, listen, you're supporting somebody who's dumb. You are either dumb yourself or evil. And I'm a glass half full guy. So I'm going to go with fucking dumb, because I hope to God you're not evil. And I don't even think they get what I'm saying, but you know, just because you're smart doesn't mean you make good decisions in life.
Right.
Because you're rich doesn't make you a good person. And because you have a college degree, I mean, Jesus, I consider myself relatively smart. And I tell people that, I went to college for a year and then I dropped out and started working in radio. And during that year in college, I pretty much drank beer and went to parties. So I'm not a highly educated guy in the traditional sense, but like I say, I'm curious and I read a lot and I pay attention and I retain a lot of that information. So that's, you know, that's where I get my education from, which I think is far more valuable than anything. What happens in real life.
Okay, I'm going to switch it up a little and ask you a question. Who or what
Sure.
multiplies your energy?
What multiplies my energy? Who or what? I think what multiplies my energy is seeing the tide turning and seeing accountability starting. I've been talking about it a long time and I get so many people coming, oh, it's never going to happen. Nothing's ever going to happen. He's never going to be accountable. And I said, just settle down. It is going to happen. And then when we start seeing it, like I said, right now we're looking at a time when everything's kind of shifted. Donald Trump couldn't lose for a long time. Now he does nothing but lose. That kind of invigorates me. I think this home stretch between now and November is going to be very invigorating for me, because we're going to see all these things that people have been waiting years for come to fruition. And in this home stretch, the end result will be positive for the country and the people of a like mind. So that kind of invigorates me. That's, you know, after doing it all this time, this is the one thing that excites me going on from here. Because I think after pounding on this and pounding on this, we're finally have a win in sight. And that to me is exciting.
You know, Mike, I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to tell us that it was your granddaughter who excites you. Because when I hear you talk about her, you're really excited and happy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? What I was talking about was in the professional level. As far as in my life, there's nobody, the two people that, you know, I love my sons and all that stuff, but you know, they're in their 30s now and they're doing what they do. But between my granddaughter and my wife, I'm really excited about that. I mean, that's pretty much my whole life. You know, my wife and I travel a lot. We're fortunate that we get along and we have fun. Sometimes we'll go on trips with other people and I'll say to my wife, well, it's just you and me go, because it's more fun if it's just you and me. My granddaughter, on the other hand, she does invigorate me. I look at her and she is hilarious. She had her first day of preschool today, so everybody's excited. I'm telling everybody that it is her first day of preschool, but she's already on the dean's list, so she's got that going for her. I love that kid. Nothing inspires me more than her. And to be perfectly honest with you, in doing what we do with the Rational Boomer podcast, I can honestly say it's for her as much as anybody, because you and I are of an age that we're going to live out our lives and things aren't going to change much. But when I'm gone, if this world or this country is worse off because people didn't do anything, I'm going to have to live with my granddaughter having to struggle with that. So she is an inspiration in terms of what I do. You're right. I get pretty excited about her. I'm thinking about her all the time, because it's funny with her. She's she looks like my wife, but much to the chagrin of my son and daughter-in-law and all the other people, she's kind of got my personality. She's a smart ass. She's pretty bold. You know, like, she's going to preschool for the first time. She's not even four yet. She's going, fuck it, let's go. She's excited about it. But she is she and I get along great. We have fun. We usually get in trouble together, but she is a big grandma's girl. And she'll always slight me for grandma. Always.
Oh.
Like one time they were playing a game together. They were playing a game together and I walk up and go, hey, can I play? No, grandpa, this is for girls only. I go, well, that makes me sad, honey. And she grabs her little stuffed fox and she goes, oh, I'm sorry, grandpa. And she hands me the fox and she goes, why don't you go cuddle with Foxy on the couch? So I'm getting dismissed by a 3-year-old.
30 seconds. Oh, that's too bad, Mike. I mean, I feel the same way as
well,
you.
Well, no, I love that attitude.
Yeah, I feel the same way as you. I feel like we left a mess. We're leaving a mess right now, for my kids are in their 20s and 30s too. And things are so much harder for them, I feel, than it was for us. I mean,
I agree.
Do you feel that way too? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I watch my kids, and fortunately my kids are doing well and stuff, but it wasn't an easy hill to climb to get to the point where you're doing okay. Mm-hmm. And I think parents today have to offer a little more help along the way, which I'm fine to do. You know, there are people who've said to me, you give your kids too much, and 18, cut them off completely. And I say, you know, here's the deal. It's my job to give them the highest possible platform to jump off. Mm-hmm. And if I have the wherewithal and resources to give it, then I'm going to give it. I'm not just doing somebody a favor. I'm doing my family, making an investment in my family. I said, I would much rather, when they're in their 20s, help them out than have to have them come home in their 40s, because mm-hmm. they're just not making it. And my joke is, I said, the day your kids leave your house is the second saddest day ever. The first saddest day are when those little bastards come back.
That's
and,
true.
And the goal is to not, they don't want to come back any more than you want them to come back. So the best thing you can do is put them in a position where they don't ever have to do that.
Right. And we don't want them coming back, living in the basement. No. We want them to be successful and our grandchildren to be successful. What would you say is...
Absolutely.
What would you say is the period in your life where you experienced the most personal growth?
Oh. I suppose it had to be, you know, the period where I'm married and I'm starting to have kids, because that's an unprecedented experience in your life. I've gone through a lot of periods, a lot of changes, a lot of doing things. But I remember when my oldest son was born, and we're in the hospital and we're ready to go home. And they had me the kid and put him in the chair for the car. And as I'm walking out, I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck are these people doing? We have no idea what to do with this. We don't know first base what to do. And that was a period of time you really have to grow, because you got to learn some shit pretty quickly, because kids, they don't know either. And they're counting on you. And it's a lot of pressure, because not only do you have to take care of them, you've got to maintain job and money so they have food and housing and clothes. And there was a period of time when my first son was born, the day we found out my wife was pregnant, both my wife and I got laid off from just, you know, menial jobs. We weren't making a ton of money. And at that point in my life, you know, I didn't have a college degree. And back then it was kind of important. I'd owned a business, so I kind of knew what I was doing, but I'd sold the business. And I was very nervous at that time. I didn't know that I'd ever be able to give my kids everything they needed. And that weighed pretty heavily on me. That was a time when I got kind of emotional before I went through that whole transition. And that's the period, I think, the period where you learn the most and you grow the most is trying to care for those other.
Oh, you just froze.
Yeah, so did you, but we're okay.
Okay. Would you say that your giving up drinking alcohol was also a transformation for you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, when I was a young kid living in South Minneapolis, going to parties and starting to drink at 14 years old was not at all unusual. So, you know, you went out and you partied and you got a little crazy. I wasn't an angry drunk or anything like that. I just funny and goofing around and getting in trouble. And then I got married at 23, and we're still pretty young. My wife will drink some, and I drink my fair share and going to parties. And then it got to a point where I got a house, I got a wife, I'm going to have a kid. I had to make that decision. I remember one day my wife and I were at a party at a friend's of mine house, not too far away. And I got a little out of hand. So the next day my wife decided to punish me. And she says, we're going to rake the yard. And we had a really big yard. She gave me a rake and said, start raking. And all she says is, when I first came out the first time to check on you, you were leaning against the tree because I had a hangover and I was just tired. Next time she came out, I was sitting next to the tree. And the next time she came out, I was laying next to the tree. And I realized that not only did it cost me the time when I was drinking, but also the time the next day when I had a hangover. And that was a real realization to me. When I knew I was going to have a kid, I said, you know, I live in an old house. Her grandfather built the house and we bought it. If this house ever started on fire at 2 a.m, I could do absolutely nothing to save my family because I wasn't in physical shape to do it. So that, with, you know, a little encouragement from my wife, I decided I'm just going to quit. I didn't go to AA or anything. I just stopped. And it wasn't easy at first, but it's like anything else. If you're determined and have a little willpower, you can do it. So I just stopped at that point and really never gave it a second thought to go back. And now in my older years, I think to myself, you know, I could probably drink wine and get away with it because I don't have the propensity to overdrink or anything. But at this point, why would I? I mean, after 34, 35 years without drinking, why would I go back? It just seems pointless. I got enough other things that can kill me at 63 years of age. I don't need another one.
No value added, right? So
No.
November comes and Joe Biden's reelected. Will you have anything to talk about? What's coming up with the boomer?
Well, with any luck, Joe Biden wins. Democrats win the House. Democrats win the Senate. And things can be done. And people will say, well, you'll have nothing to talk about. Well, that's not true because I'm not a Democrat. I guess I'm an independent. Up until Donald Trump, I didn't see much difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats have their share of problems. And they make their share of promises and don't always come through with them. They do stupid things, like they could have codified Roe v. Wade when they had the chance, but they dropped the fucking ball. So if the Democrats, win across the board, like I think, we still have a long way to fix the shit here. We've got a big hole to dig out of. And we've got problems that were caused by Republicans and Democrats. And I think somebody still needs to be pounding on that. As I told people, I said, you have to understand in this country, it isn't Democrats versus Republicans. It's us versus them. Because it's not just Republicans that have taken money out of our pockets and put it in the rich. It's not just Republicans. Now, at this point, the reason I'm so focused on the Republicans is because it's a dumpster fire trying to overthrow our country. I'm just dealing with the worst problem now. Once we get that worst problem out of the way, then we'll deal with the transformation of America. And I think we're kind of on the border, on the edge of that, because there are a lot of things that are going on in this country. And the one thing you can credit Donald Trump with is that all the stuff we're seeing now that's come to the surface, I think a lot of it's been going on for decades. We just didn't know about it by way of the media or the government telling us. He's brought all this toxic shit to the surface, and now we know. So there's no closing Pandora's box after that, even if the Democrats are in power. And my biggest worry with Democrats is that, okay, you get the power. So what's the motivation to keep hustling for the people? Are you lazy or are you telling us the truth? And somebody has to be there to force them to tell the truth. So I'm going to have plenty to talk about because I'm not Biden's boy. I didn't think he was the best choice. Turns out he was the best choice for the time. I think this country needs to go a little more progressive. Not because I'm progressive.
But to get in the middle.
You live in New Jersey, you said?
Yes.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's kind of, I explain it like this. I live in Minnesota. If you're driving down the road on an icy day and your car swerves to the right, you got to crank it all the way to the left to just get it back to the center. So we got to even things out. And I think that's what we need to do in this country.
Agreed. I want to ask you, did you watch Fargo this season?
I watched a few of them. My wife watched all of them. She loved it.
Why don't you have a Minnesotan accent like Juno Temple does? She says Minnesota.
Well, Juno Temp. Yeah, I know. There are people that talk like that, but not that many. It's kind of overblown.
It is.
You know, being in radio all this time, I guess I've been kind of trained to try to speak as normally as possible. But most people I talk to don't have that. You know, it's kind of a caricature of a Minnesotan. Now, there are some just like that. Okay. You know, I can take you to parts of town where they talk just like that. But no, I've never had a Minnesota. Some people have said, you almost sound Southern. I said, well, I was raised in South Minneapolis, so I come by that naturally. But
okay.
No, I've never had the Minnesota accent. I can't say that there aren't members of my family, grandparents and stuff that didn't kind of lean that way.
Okay.
It's recognizable, certainly. I understand it.
Okay. Here's your last question. What is one piece of advice you would give someone who is seeking to make meaning out of this third chapter, meaning you finish school, you finish raising your family, and you're an empty nest, and here we are. What's your advice to someone like me who's in that place?
Well, I think a lot. Well, I think you got to figure it out. You don't. I think a lot of people get to my age, and I see them a lot going to reunions and stuff. People like to settle into being old. They go, okay, I'm old. This is how old people act. They're not very active. They're not very progressive. They just kind of settle into being old. And I've never really been able to do that, neither has my wife. If you take my mind, it's more somebody of 35. Now, my body's a different story, but I've always told my kids, I said, no matter how old you are or how young you are, you need to always be chasing something. Because once you're not chasing something, some hope or dream off in the future, then you're just sedentary and you're just waiting to die. And a lot of people are okay with that. But that was kind of the part of the thing with the TikTok and the podcast. A lot of people said I couldn't do it. I thought I might be able to do it. So I said, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And I've been chasing that. How many followers can I get? How many listeners can I get to the podcast? Can I get it to the level where it's legitimate? I have some credibility and it's just the same or even better than when I was working in radio. And I think, and take a look at the time, you know, a lot of people look at this period of life sad because, you know, the kids are gone. I was a mom. I was a dad. Now I got nothing to do. Well, you got a lot of shit you can do. You know, whether you have limited funds or a lot of money, there's always things you can do. It's important to stay active and try to be as young as you can. Because once you become sedentary, that's where the end comes. I believe that if you just give up, you're going to die at some point and you're going to be sorry. I told my wife that if we're 60 at the time and we'd live to be 80, we're going to make the last 20 years fun and we're going to do all the shit we want to do. We're not going to worry about all the things we worried about. We're going to get some fun out of this life. And frankly, my experience, while there's been many funny, fun times with kids and all this stuff, for me personally, and I think my wife too, this is the most fun time because this is a time when I have the most freedom. I don't have a billion responsibilities. I go to bed what time I want to go, and I get up when I want to get up. I do what I want to do all day, and I don't have to worry because of, you know, pensions and Social Security and stuff. I don't have to worry about keeping the lights on. To me, this is one of the most pleasurable times for me from 60 to 80, presuming I live that long. And I think people need to recognize it and capitalize on it instead of just throwing it away. And I think a lot of people throw it away.
I agree with you. I think it's the best time of life now. Fewer responsibilities. We have, you know, some of us have grandchildren and it's a completely different experience than even having your own children, you know, and it's a great, big, beautiful world out there. And we have years still to experience it. So Mike, thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell us how we can keep in touch with you?
Well, my home phone and my Social Security number is, there's a real easy way to get to everything because I'm on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and most all of that is the same. It's all the same TikToks. I do TikToks and I put them on the other stuff. YouTube, I have the TikToks, but I also have the podcast. You can go to YouTube and just look up Rational Boomer, or I have a page that's a link tree. And It's just rationalboomer.com, and you go there. There's all kinds of links to YouTube, to Instagram, to TikTok, to whatever. If you want to find something, that's all you do is go to rationalboomer.com, and it's pretty simple.
Awesome.
Or just listen for the old loud white guy.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
No problem. Thank you for having me on. I had fun.
If you've enjoyed today's podcast and want to stay connected, subscribe to our weekly newsletter at www.thepebbleinyourshoe.com. To never miss a podcast episode, make sure to hit that subscribe button wherever you listen. You can also watch the episodes on the Pebble in Your Shoe podcast channel on YouTube. If you have an interesting story of change and growth in the third chapter of life or know someone who does, reach out at pebbleshoepodcast@gmail.com. Again, pebbleshoepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.